Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Have you ever wondered if you had a pre-birth plan on what you were supposed to do when you got here on Earth? Kind of like a blueprint, a master mission that you're supposed to accomplish while you're incarnated in this time. Well, today's guest is going to shine a little bit of light on pre-birth planning. We have author Rob Schwartz. Now, Rob and I had a fascinating conversation about his journey discovering what pre-birth planning is, his experience with a medium that launched him on his journey, and so much more. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show Rob Schwartz. How you doing, Rob?
I'm great. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I saw an interview with you and I thought it was fascinating. You were talking about soul planning and your soul's purpose in life and all of these kinds of things, and really haven't delved really deep into those concepts. But before we get on the show before we get started, how did you start your spiritual journey?
Well, it all happened in a short time period back in the year 2003. For a number of years, I was in the corporate world, basically doing corporate writing, marketing, communications. Did not like that at all. Felt very unfulfilled. And more specifically, I felt like there was something I came to do here on Earth that I wasn't doing. And then three things happened in 2003 within a short time of each other. The first was I had my first session ever with a psychic medium. And she started to channel my spirit guide. She had to explain to me what a spirit guide was. I mean, I'd never even heard the term before. And the guide said to me, speaking through her, "You planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born." Now, I come from a very conventional background, so I would probably have dismissed this as some kind of delusion on my part, except that the guides then launched into this very lengthy and detailed monologue in which they told me why I had planned all my biggest challenges. And what was really interesting was that they knew what all my challenges had been without me telling them anything about myself, nor had I told the medium anything prior to the session. So as you can imagine, if you're talking to beings who know everything about you, it gives them a lot of credibility. Then, not long after that session with the medium, I was introduced to a woman who has the ability to go into trance and channel her soul. So I spent about 15 hours talking with her soul in detail about pre-birth planning, and her soul explained to me why we do this, how it's done, which challenges had been discussed for her, which ones had been chosen and why, which ones had not been chosen and why not. That 15 hours of channeling really served as the foundation for all three books I went on to write. And then the third and most pivotal thing, the most important thing by far, shortly after these other two experiences, middle of the afternoon on a weekday, I took a break from work and I'm walking down the sidewalk. That's all I was doing, walking down the street. And I had a spiritually transformative experience in which every time I looked at another person, this feeling of pure, overwhelming, unconditional love washed over me. And when I say unconditional love here, that's as close as I can get to the feeling in words in the English language. But there really are no words that get close to it. This was not a human love. It was something divine, something transcendent. And I was caused to know, you might say, I was caused to know in this experience that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love. Now, what I didn't know at the time, which I figured out a couple of years later, was why this was happening. The reason it happened is that much later, after I looked at many people's pre-birth plans for my first book, I discovered that every pre-birth plan, no matter what is being planned, is always based on complete unconditional love for every person involved. So that experience that I had walking down the sidewalk that day, that was given to me so that when I found this result in my research, I would know with absolute certainty that what I was finding was true.
Now, can you explain exactly what soul planning or pre-birth planning is?
Yeah. So each one of us is a portion of our soul's energy placed into a physical body. We are eternal beings, and we're made literally from light. We're non-physical in nature, but we assume physical form in order to have certain experiences. So the life plan, as I understand it, is created by the soul in consultation with God or Source, angels, ascended masters, and the other people who are in your soul group. A soul group is a collection of 25 to 75 people or souls who are at more or less the same stage of evolution. And you take turns playing every conceivable role for each other in an earthly incarnation. So the plan is created by the soul in consultation with these other very wise and loving beings. And then the personality is created by the soul. The personality is informed by the soul. This is the life plan. At that point, the vast majority of people say, that sounds great, sign me up, let's do it. But there's a very small percentage who start to experience human emotions like fear or doubt. If you express fear or doubt that the plan is perhaps too difficult, then you are reassured by your soul and your guides that, no, this is for your highest good and you can do it. At that point, the vast majority of people who express doubt now agree to the plan and they incarnate. But there's a small percentage of those who express doubt who continue to feel doubt. And if you continue to feel doubt, then the plan is amended until it's acceptable to you. So bottom line, nobody is forced to do anything they don't want to do.
It's fascinating. You spoke about in your book, the Council of Elders. Is that considered the Ascended Masters and so on?
Well, everybody has their own Council of Elders. These are Ascended Masters and other highly evolved beings. Your council members know literally everything about you, every past life you've had, every earthly incarnation, every non-physical lifetime, every lifetime on another planet. They know what you're working on in this lifetime. They know why you planned your biggest challenges. So in the form of hypnosis that I practice, it's called a between lives soul regression. It leads the client to a point where they are in front of their council of elders. And once you get to your council, you can ask them literally anything about your life and get an answer. So people will come out of a between lives soul regression and they'll say things like, I have no more questions about my life. They answered every single one. The other comment that people make quite a bit, they'll talk about the great unconditional love they feel emanating from the council and also total non-judgment. And they'll say things like, I could tell that my council knew about all the bad things I've done in my life, but they loved me completely and unconditionally anyway. And, you know, for the average person, that's the first time they've experienced true unconditional love since coming into body. So it's really a homecoming in a way.
You mentioned bad things and good things. The concept of good and bad is something that is more earthly bound because, in my opinion, I think that it is not something that I don't think there's bad things in the Council of Elders. There's like the six really good guys, but there's that one dude, you know, he's a little bit shady. Like it generally doesn't exist on the other side from all my research and reading into ancient texts and so on. So what is it about the concept of good and bad that really doesn't make a lot of sense in the other side versus what we add so much charge, a negative charge or a positive charge to a certain situation that happens because one person could look at that same situation you know, a tree falls on a house, the house owner is, oh my God, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. But then the house builder that comes along, like, this is the greatest day of my life. I have all this new work that comes along. It's the exact same thing. So it's not, the tree falling is not actually good or bad. It is. So I just would love to hear your ideas on that.
Well, that's exactly my understanding as well. Your soul looks at everything that happens in an earthly incarnation with total neutrality. Now, it's very difficult for the embodied personality to do that because you feel physical pain and also emotional pain. You suffer. So from a human perspective, suffering is viewed as bad. Your soul, again, looks at it with complete neutrality. The viewpoint that you have when you're back on the other side planning life challenges is very different than it is here. It's not based in duality. You yourself don't look at things as good or bad. You look at them as providing opportunities for evolution. And in particular, you're very much aware that a lifetime is actually very brief, that nobody is permanently harmed by anything that happens here. And yet the wisdom becomes part of you literally for all eternity. From that perspective, it actually does make sense that people would plan great challenges, even though once they're embodied, if they hear about this concept, they often think, well, there's no way I would have done that.
Now, why would a soul want to plan their life and not just kind of go nilly-dilly and just see what happens? Kind of like what we all do every day, thinking, most of us think, I wake up in the morning and we just, hey, whatever happened today to me happens today to me. Some opportunity will happen. Maybe some great tragedy will happen, but life is life. Why would we want to plan our life?
The soul pursues evolution relentlessly. And so the soul wants to do an incarnation because it will contribute to evolution. What does evolution mean? Well, from the soul's perspective, it essentially means you become more loving. You are a combination of light and dark, and you are clarifying or purifying in the direction of greater light and less darkness. Now, having said that, a lot of people have large segments of their life plan that are left more or less open-ended so that they can explore whatever they would like to explore. The first 40 years of my life were very much like that, and it led to feeling lost and confused and purposeless. But from the soul's perspective, that can be a great growth opportunity as well. Essentially, when you have a lifetime, it's part of what I call an arc of lives. An arc of lives is a set of incarnations in which you work on one or more themes. For example, compassion. You have an arc of lives in which you intend to deepen in compassion. When you've done that to whatever extent you would like to, you go on to a new arc of lives in which you work on something else. So the soul plans the life so that whatever your intentions are, they're going to be actualized.
So in many ways, it is kind of like a story arc of a character in a movie.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, because in the story arc, you know, the character starts off as, you know, Luke Skywalker starts off as a young boy, and at the end is become a Jedi and has faced his father. And there's so many things that there's a major arc in his character. For us, if I'm understanding what you're explaining, we have multiple arcs through multiple lifetimes to work on certain aspects of things that we need to learn, like compassion, empathy, more loving, and then also how it feels to be on the other side of that feeling when you have no compassion or being beaten down. I mean, from what I've read over the years, is that we will experience everything that can be possible. You will be the king, you will be the peasant, you will be the oppressor, you'll be the oppressee, you'll be the jailed, you'll be the prisoner, you'll be the jailer. And the duality of all every aspect of what can be experienced in the human and physical world, we will at one point or another go down those roads. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. That's exactly my understanding as well. And not only do you have an arc of lives in which you work on a theme or themes, but within each physical incarnation on Earth, you have what I call inflection points. These are points where if you were graphing time and consciousness, you would see the slope of the consciousness line suddenly shoot upwards from the inflection point. So the inflection point is almost always a life challenge that you yourself agreed to before you were born. And it's intended to create that rapid growth, that spike in your level of consciousness. A lot of the learning in the earth plane is done through what I call learning through opposites life plans. So coming back to compassion as a common example, if you are a soul who wants to deepen in compassion and you're choosing a learning through opposites life plan, you would, for example, incarnate by choice into a family in which you're going to be treated with a profound lack of compassion.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
The absence of compassion in the external environment is intended to drive you within, where your soul hopes over time you'll cultivate self-compassion. And then the life plan calls sometime later for you to take the self-compassion and turn it outward in service to others. That's a very common type of life plan.
Now, you've mentioned the concept of ascended masters. Can you explain to the audience what is an ascended master?
An ascended master is a being who is very, very highly evolved, which means very loving and very wise. Jesus is an ascended master. Buddha is an ascended master. Saint Germain, Kuan Yin. There are many, and some are in religious faith. Some have nothing to do with organized religion. And these beings very often continue to work with those of us who are still incarnating on the earth plane. Occasionally, they come into physical form themselves in order to help in a certain way. But mostly, they work with us through inspiration. They'll speak to our minds and to our hearts the same way our spirit guides do. And they inspire us with higher concepts, higher forms of thinking, and greater love so that we can learn whatever it is that we came here to learn.
And who are the spirit guides? What are these spirit guides? Are they just old relatives of ours? What are spirit guides exactly?
Spirit guides are the beings who are most involved in our day-to-day lives. They're overseeing what's going on. They know everything that's happening with you. The way they know this is through your vibration. So if you're happy, they sense that. If you're in distress, they sense that, and they come to your aid. They know what your life plan is. They know what you wanted to learn by coming here. And they help you in every way they can to learn what you came to learn. A lot of times, the way in which they help is through blocking you from doing something that you think you want to do and that you think is for your highest good. I'll give you an example from my own life. At the time, shortly before I embarked on the path that I'm on now, I was looking for other things to do in the corporate world. It hadn't yet occurred to me to delve into spirituality. I just knew that I was unhappy doing what I was doing. And so I applied for all these jobs that I knew I was well qualified for, and I wasn't getting any of them. And I had the very distinct sense that beings were closing these doors on purpose. Now, at that time, I didn't know what a spirit guide was, but looking back on it, it's very clear to me my guides closed those doors because I was supposed to go on the path that I'm currently on now.
Yeah, and I think that's something that so many of us can identify with, that we want certain things and it just doesn't happen for us. And we want it with all our, I mean, sometimes you're chasing that thing for 10, 15 years, 20 years, and it just never materializes for you. And the moment where you find that something that it's more aligned with what you are supposed to be doing, doors just swing wide open and things are so easy, and things that you would have never thought would happen without any real effort almost sometimes. And it's almost magical in the way that it happens. It happened to me in my life a few times, but I can see so many times that people, I mean, I say this jokingly, but imagine if we would have gotten everything we wanted as a child or as a teenager, or God forbid in our 20s. I mean, we would have gotten into the wrong relationships, we would have gotten the wrong jobs, we would have been wrong opportunities, we would have gotten into, there's so many things that would have destroyed us if we would have gotten everything we wanted, every aspect, every point of along the way. And if you think of it that way, then you're like, when things don't actually work out the exact way you plan,
there's probably a good reason for it.
Yeah, there's a very good reason for it. And, you know, the converse is true. A lot of the things that we think are absolutely terrible when they happen, 5 years later, 10 years later, you look back and you say, you know what? That was one of the best things that ever happened to me.
No question. I had a guest once call it the hindsight window, is when the moment it happens to the moment that you go, oh, wait a minute, that really was a good thing that happened to me. Thank God that happened to me the way it is. Right. That window is how long it will take you to let go of that negative baggage. Because once you understand that that negative thing that happened to you, it could have been, you know, you didn't get the job, you didn't get the opportunity, you didn't get the girl or the guy, you know, you didn't fly off to Paris when you really, you know, you had to stay in New York. You missed that train that derailed things like that. You start realizing, because as you get older, you look back at your life and you just go, you know, that bad thing that I thought was absolutely life ending at the moment it happened. You look back 5 years later, I'm like, thank God I didn't date that girl. Yeah. Thank God that girl broke up with me. Thank God that job opportunity. Thank God I got fired that time because I got fired, I launched my own company. If I wouldn't have never gotten fired, God knows where I would be, and so on. So it's really interesting. You know, as you get older, you start looking at these things differently.
Yeah, and then the work that I do is very much focused on helping people to see the deeper spiritual meaning and purpose of their biggest challenges. You know, when people do a between life soul regression, they talk to their counsel, the questions they ask are generally focused on the most challenging things, and they want to know, why did this happen? And the counsel will answer that question. The three books I wrote are organized by chapter, by type of life challenge. So that is very much the focus of what I'm doing.
Now, in many of the older, you know, ancient texts, spiritual texts, they talk about a concept called karma. You know, many of us, it's in the zeitgeist now. People call it instant karma now when something happens. And it is something that most people understand, the concept of karma, you know, at least on an intellectual standpoint. Can you explain karma and what effect it has on our soul's purpose, our life plan, and so on?
My understanding of karma may be a bit different than the average understanding. What I've seen in my work is that karma is a feeling of incompletion in regard to a particular experience. To take a simple example, let's say the two people had a past life together in which one was ill and the other person was that person's caregiver. When those two people transition back to the other side and have their life review, as we all do at the end of an incarnation, they'll see this caregiving relationship and they may or may not feel complete with it. May is the key word there, and they decide for themselves, we're complete with that or we feel incomplete. If they feel complete, then as I understand it, there is no karma and they'll go on to plan something completely new and different. But if they feel incomplete with it, the feeling of incompletion is the karma. So let's say they feel that way, how do they balance the karma? Well, the easiest thing to do is just to trade places. So now the one who was ill plans to be a caregiver. The one who is the caregiver plans the life challenge of physical illness. It's a very simple example, but that's essentially how it works.
Well, so if you are, you know, a thief, or, you know, you're a thief in this life and you steal and you cause lots of misery for people because of your actions, there has to be a sort of you know, action reaction kind of scenario, because you just can't go willy nilly, you know, doing all these kind of bad things in life and not have some sort of karmic issue with it later on in another life, at least from my understanding from the religious texts and the spiritual texts that I've read.
That's my understanding as well. But the key to understanding all of that is to know that when you transition back to the other side, and let's say you were a thief in your last incarnation, if you could make the transition back to the non-physical realm, get there and not feel incomplete with that experience, then you still would not have any karma. But the thing is, you're almost certainly going to feel that you want to balance it. That's simply the nature of an unconditionally loving soul. If you've done harm, then you want to make restitution. So it would be extremely unlikely that a thief would get back to the other side and say, you know what, I feel good about having been a thief. Let's go on and do something new. Very, very unlikely.
So why would someone or a soul want to plan a life of evil, of mass murder, of, you know, of a dictator, of a Hitler or something along those lines, of kills millions of people? The amount of that amount of pendulum swing to, you know, I'm not talking about stealing, shoplifting here. We're talking about massive, massive, you know, quote unquote evil here on the planet. Why would someone, why would the soul want to experience that kind of experience here in this, on this plane?
I don't think that souls want to play that kind of a role. What happens is the incarnate personality always has free will. So regardless of what has been planned, you can use your free will to make decisions in which you deviate partially or even completely from the pre-birth plan. And it's interesting you mentioned Hitler, because it's my understanding that's what happened with him. What was explained to me in the channeling sessions for my books is that Hitler actually planned, believe it or not, to be a great spiritual leader. And so his soul equipped him with gifts that were intended to make that possible. Gifts of charisma, oratory, rhetoric, and so forth.
Yeah.
There was even a specific option in Hitler's pre-birth blueprint that he would use his painting to spiritually inspire people. You might know he liked to paint. He was very good at it too. But apparently he had quite a difficult childhood. And so he used his free will to respond to the challenges of his childhood by going in the opposite of the direction that had been planned. That, I think, is what happens.
So he had the choice of either becoming a spiritual master or going down the path that he went on, and he just happened to choose the wrong path. Talk about bad choices in life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty bad choice, to say the least. Now, why is it so difficult for us to find our life's purpose? Because so many of us do kind of meander and just are lost in the woods, like you were for so many years, trying to figure out what truly makes us happy. Why are we here? What kind of gifts we've been given to share with the world? And you know, that the thing we were talking about is that when you find that thing that you're supposed to do, doors open up and you become more happy, more fulfilled in life. Why is it so difficult to find that? Some find it early on in life, but from my experience, most don't. Most take years, if not a lifetime. Many don't even find it in this life. And they just kind of are doing things that are not happy. They become bitter and angry and so on. So why is it so difficult?
Well, I think there are a couple of things going on there. One is that we come in with amnesia. Usually we don't remember anything about the pre-birth plan. Now, that's intentional. And why do we do that? It's kind of like the difference between an open book test and a closed book test in school. You know, if the test is going to be open book, you don't study as hard. You figure you'll just look up the answers during the exam. And so you don't learn as much. By forgetting the pre-birth plan, it effectively turns life into a closed book test. It makes it more difficult and challenging, but you also end up learning a lot more. The other thing that I think is happening there is that we don't understand what to look for when we're trying to figure out our purpose. So the average person is thinking in terms of fame, prestige, money, collecting material success, right, and so forth. That is not success as defined by your soul. Your soul will try to lead you on the primary path that you've planned through inspiration, aspiration, excitement, and joy. If we were taught from early childhood, look for aspiration, inspiration, excitement, and joy, a lot of people would find their purpose much more quickly and much more easily. But we're not taught that, and so it makes it much more difficult.
You know, from the reading I've done over the years, I've heard that if in past lives you have you're very heroic, you do a lot of good deeds, you help a lot of people, it kind of like in the next lifetime, you could be born. So let's say you had a couple of lifetimes, two or three lifetimes, that you just kept getting more heroic, more empathetic, more compassionate as you went forward. And then all of a sudden in one lifetime, then you're like, okay, you are going to be born extremely attractive, you're going to be born extremely wealthy. You're going to have access to material things in this world that most don't have.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And that's in many ways a test to see how you react to that scenario. And also because most in that scenario, I can't say everybody, but most in that scenario could end up in ego, could end up in materialism because it's just too intoxicating. But many who have been born into that scenario reject it and follow a spiritual path. And there are, you know, Buddha is a perfect example of that exact thing. So is that a fair statement?
I think that does happen, but I don't think it's quite that simple. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who have heroic lives or lives in which they become very compassionate or whatever it might be, sometimes they'll then turn around and plan very, very challenging lives just to mix it up. There's also something that I refer to as a vacation lifetime, which is sort of what you're describing. A vacation lifetime is what it sounds like. It's a lifetime that has few or perhaps no great challenges in it. And souls will give themselves vacation lifetimes, sometimes as a reward for having done well in a past life. They'll also choose a vacation lifetime if they never had one before, because the soul wants to experience everything.
Wow, I kind of never heard that vacation lifetime. Yeah. That's a really interesting look at things, because it seems that there are many people in this world that are living a vacation lifetime. They're just rich and they do whatever they want and they have all the access to whatever they want. There's no conceivable way that they don't suffer unless they truly want to suffer. And so there are these, they're not many, but there are a good amount. And you look at, you know, the life of the rich and famous, if you will, and certain things like that. It's interesting to think that like, yeah, you know, I've had a rough couple of lifetimes. I'm going to go to Tahiti for a while.
Well, you know, a lot of the people who appear on the surface to have it very easy, they have all kinds of challenges that we don't even know about. And you have to also consider the nature of the human condition. When you're back on the other side, you're in a state of union or unity consciousness with all other beings. That feels great. When you come into body, you're in a state of separation. You appear to be an individual who is separate and distinct from everybody else. That creates anxiety, it creates loneliness, it creates all forms of suffering. And not only do you think that you are separate from all other beings, but now you've got an ego to deal with. And the ego can be very cruel, very punishing, and quite tricky and devious to have to deal with. So even those people who seem to have it so very easy, they could be having huge internal battles with their own ego.
Oh, I mean, look at Will Smith. I mean, we all saw from the outside, he seems like he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world, rich, famous, does whatever, you know, he had it all. But behind the scenes, you can, you know, it's come to light all of the suffering that he's had to deal with in his relationships. And then God forbid, obviously something snapped at the Oscars and he did what he did when he slapped Chris Rock. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't always mean that they have everything that they want and it's all perfect. I think Jim Carrey said it best. He's like, I wish everybody could get everything they've ever wanted in this life so they would understand that it doesn't mean anything.
That's a great way to put it.
Because he has that. He literally, every dream that he ever wanted came true. He became one of the richest celebrities in the world. He became one of the most famous people in the world. He did everything he wanted. He had the most beautiful women at his side, everything. And then he finally decided, no, this is not for me. To the point where now he's thinking of retiring and just paint. You know, so it's very interesting.
Yeah, I think Jim Carrey is somebody who really gets it. He understands what the Earth experience is ultimately all about.
Yeah, it's interesting to see his career because, you know, you and I have seen him from when he was, you know, growing up and coming up in the business to where he is today is substantially different. I think even it's so funny that Tom Shalhoub, I forgot how to pronounce his last name. He was the director of Ace Ventura and I think a bunch of big movies, Bruce Almighty, a lot of those big Jim Carrey movies. And he one day was living in a multi-million-dollar mansion in Pasadena alone. And he was just sat there and he's like, this can't be it. And he literally rejected all of it, stopped making big Hollywood movies and started doing movies that he wanted to make, and moved into a trailer.
Wow.
In a trailer park, and rode around in a bicycle. Like, he completely went 180 about what he was doing in life. And again, someone in the scope of Hollywood, one of the biggest directors, successful directors, money, he could get any project he wanted made. And he's just like, this is not what I signed up for in many ways. It's interesting. Yeah,
I heard that something similar about Elon Musk the other day, and I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently he sold his 6 homes and now has a very small home. And when he travels, he doesn't stay in a penthouse suite. He bunks with a friend, you know, stays in a spare room, things like that.
He's couch surfing. Yeah, he's a couch surfing billionaire. would be awkward if Elon came over. I'm like, hey, can I crash in your couch? I'm like, I mean, there's a Super 8 down the street, sir. Much more comfortable than this. But no, he's an interesting soul. He's doing things that are really interesting. He is, in our generation, he's pushing the envelope in many, many ways. Some people don't like him, and that's fine. But you can't deny what he's done. I mean, a lot of people didn't like Steve Jobs, but he changed the world. He put a dent in the universe, as they said. You know, people don't like Bill Gates. He did do something that moved the whole human race forward. Right. And I think Elon's trying to do that now as well, which is really fascinating to watch his journey and what he's doing.
Yeah. And hopefully the whole Twitter thing is going to be true, you know, open source, a place where people can really speak freely and not be censored. We'll see how it develops.
That's going to be an interesting. Yeah. That's another, like when you thought there was nothing else he could do, you're like, oh, okay. Well, now let's see what happens.
Right.
Now, is suffering needed to learn as a soul?
I would not say that it's absolutely necessary, but it's a very powerful, effective, and accelerated way to learn. You know, the fact of the matter is, and I see this very clearly in the stories I looked at for my books, there's a subset of souls who learn best by having their hearts broken open through suffering. And if you are one of those souls, you would choose to come to Earth because that is what happens here. People don't like to hear that, but I think that is one of the reasons why there is so much suffering on Earth. A lot of souls truly learn best that way.
I mean, I only could say from my own personal experience that when you suffer and you go through something very traumatic, you learn. Yeah, I mean, you have a much better chance of learning a lesson doing that. It's kind of like, I could tell you about the fire and don't put your hand in it.
Right.
But until you put your hand in it and feel the burn, you really won't understand the lesson. You might be able to get it a little bit, but when you touch, I promise you touch fire once, you don't touch it again, generally speaking.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And again, when you're planning these challenges from the other side, you know that the lifetime is brief. You're not going to be permanently harmed, nor are you going to do permanent harm to anyone. And yet the wisdom will be with you for all eternity. From that perspective, it does make sense that souls would plan great challenges for themselves.
I know a lot of, I think everyone listening feels that they have challenges in their life. I think everyone has a challenge or two left, have them in their lives without question, some more than others. But you do learn, and it's not always the most popular concept for people to understand. But, you know, I've gone through a lot of different challenges in my life. I'm sure you have as well. And each one of them has taught me massive amounts of information and lessons that I carry with me to this day. And a lot of people ask me, I wrote a book about one of my most traumatic ones. And they said, if you would go back, would you change it? And I go, no. If I changed it, I wouldn't be who I am. I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now, speaking to you, if I hadn't gone through that experience in life. And it was very traumatic, but yet it was part of my journey who made it made me what I am today.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the suffering that comes from life challenges, it doesn't come only from the challenge itself, whatever it was that was happening. It comes from the fact that people perceive themselves to be victims of the challenge. They've been victimized by another person or by God or by the universe, however they're looking at it. And that place of being in a victim, that is a form of suffering in and of itself. And what I see in my work is that it tends to be self-perpetuating, because when you believe that you're a victim, you vibrate at the frequency of victim. When you vibrate at the frequency of victim, you're energetically stating to the universe that you are a victim. Well, whatever energetic statement you make to the universe, it always responds in exactly the same way. It always says, yes, that's right, you are. So if you state energetically to the universe that you're a victim, it says, yes, you are. And it brings you more experiences that seem on the surface to confirm to you that you are, in fact, a victim. The way to break out of that negative self-perpetuating cycle is simply to understand that you are the powerful, courageous soul who planned your challenges before you were born. Even if you don't know why you planned them, just knowing that you planned them will pull you out of victim consciousness. And then if you come into some understanding of why you planned them, that's actually even better, because then you can go about learning those lessons in a much more conscious and much less arduous manner.
And like Henry Ford says, if you believe you can't or you can, you're right. And that's, yeah. It's all about in the mind of what you believe is going to happen. It's so true though. If you believe all people are bad and nasty, it's funny how those people keep showing up in your life. But if you believe everyone's loving and compassionate and, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, generally speaking, most of those people are coming to your path. You know, it's very fascinating to start thinking about it. But again, it's very interesting to talk about it all intellectually, but you just got to look at your own life journey and just take a lot of the things that we're discussing here and figure it out, how it applies to your personal life journey as you've been going through it.
Well, beliefs are very, very important. The third dimension, as I understand it, is set up to be a mirror of your beliefs. Whatever it is you believe, it will be reflected or mirrored back to you, just as you were describing a moment ago. So if you have beliefs that are creating suffering for you, it's very important to identify those beliefs and then change them. And the way you do this, as I understand it, is that beliefs create thoughts, thoughts create feelings, and feelings create actions. So if you want to figure out what your beliefs are, work backwards in the causal chain. Start at the level of thought, go one step back and ask, if I'm thinking this, what must I believe to be true? And so it's not hard to do that. I mean, as you're going through your day, be mindful of the thoughts that are going through your head. Choose one that's likely to be a fruitful examination. That would be something like a judgment. So let's say you're walking down the street and the thought goes through your mind, ooh, somebody should call the fashion police. You know, somebody is dressed in a strange or unique way. That's a fruitful thought to look at. Stop yourself and say, okay, I just thought somebody should call the fashion police. What must I believe if I'm thinking that thought? Well, clearly I must believe certain forms of dress are okay and certain forms of dress are not okay. Then you ask, is that belief true? Well, no, clearly it isn't. It's a result of conditioning. And then substitute a correct thought for the false thought. A correct thought would be something like, everyone can dress however they like.
Now, you've discussed a concept called the Michael system. What is the Michael system?
Michael here is a channel consciousness, a group consciousness, or a collective. And Michael has channeled a lot of information about life plan relative to soul age and soul archetype. So it's a very complex system, and I'm not an expert in it, but just to give you a feel for it, some of the archetypes are priest. I'm in the priest archetype, king, warrior, and so on. And then there are different stages of soul age. It's something like infant, young, middle-aged, mature, and old. So the kind of life plan you create before you were born depends upon your archetype and your soul age. So for example, a young king would plan to have power for the sake of having power. An old king would plan to have power in order to use that power to help others. A young priest would do something like plan to lead an evangelical congregation. an old priest would plan to do something like what I'm doing in this lifetime. That's essentially how it works.
That's really interesting and fascinating, because you're absolutely right. Sometimes, I mean, if you want to be a king, if you're a young king, you generally want it, you want power for power's sake. Yeah. And
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
There are many dictators around the world currently who are young.
to say the least,
and people in power who are young and they just want power just for the sake of power. But there are others in power who truly want to help and want to be of service to the people that they that rule under, but at least have some sort of power over in one way, shape, or form. It's really interesting to think about that. And I guess at a certain point, the ascended masters are obviously old souls, and they're at the end of their journey in this physical realm, and they finally can transcend to the other, almost as, there's one question I want to ask you. Are we trapped here? In other words, so many of us are like, we're trapped in this kind of, we got to go and learn all these lessons, experience all these things. And if we don't learn these lessons, we will keep repeating these lessons and things will continue to, we keep going down this circle until we can finally get to a place where you can ascend as a master, like a Jesus or a Buddha or a Yogananda or so on and so forth, who finally can connect with source, connect with God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And we've learned everything we needed to learn here. Now we're moving on to the next stage, whatever that stage might be. Is that a fair statement?
I think that that is more or less a fair statement. I don't believe that we're trapped here in the sense that God or some being external to ourselves is saying, you have to have a certain number of incarnations on earth. I think what happens, as we were talking about earlier, you do certain things in a lifetime. Not all of them are of love, so to speak. And when you get back to the other side and you have your life review, you feel incomplete in regard to those actions. So you are, quote unquote, trapped in the sense that you yourself choose to come back because of that feeling of incompletion. You want to make amends in many cases, but I don't believe that anybody is forcing you to come back. You make that choice yourself.
And that's just the nature of being a soul. You just right. want to, you know, you want to do good because you yeah. just wanted like, hey, you know, I did a lot of shady stuff there. I feel really incomplete about it. I got to go back and kind of pay back and deal with the things that I went through so I can kind of balance out the good and the bad, which is a really interesting concept because I heard from I forgot who was on the show and said this. I think it was a yogi who came on and said that whenever there's a great quote unquote evil in the world, there is a great good that pops up to fight against it, balances it. So in World War II, Hitler showed up and then the Allies showed up. The Allies weren't there before. Mm-hmm. They showed up. And then when it dispersed. It's kind of like this balancing power. And you can see it in nature everywhere. If there's a population explosion of rabbits, then the coyotes will come in and do their job and bring it back down to a balanced state. So, because if there's too many rabbits, they eat all the vegetation and then there's no balance in the ecosystem. So there's always a balance in life. So anytime there is a great evil or a great thing that we all have to fight, the great good comes out. And you can see it now with what's happening in the Ukraine. It's a really great negative thing that's happening there without question. But you can see this alliance of, you know, everyone is an agreement almost about it. I haven't seen that in my lifetime, you know, and that whole situation, I think that balancing power will continue to go in that way. What do you think?
I agree with you that there seems to be a unified viewpoint around the world as to what's happening there. And I think that shows a lot of spiritual progress, a lot of increase in our consciousness. You know, over the course of the time that you and I have been alive and in body, there have been many, many conflicts like what's happening in Ukraine.
Right.
And nobody really cared or paid all that much attention. Well, now all of a sudden things are different. Everybody's unified against what Russia is doing. I think that shows a lot of progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the 90s, the beginning of the 90s, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, it was kind of exactly something, not as united, but there was definitely a moment. I remember because I was afraid of being drafted because I was in high school at the time. But, you know, they're like, no, you can't invade a sovereign nation. And then everybody came in and, you know, in 30 minutes, it ended that situation pretty quickly. There has been moments like that, but nothing like what's going on right now. And I have to ask you, just in general, there's so much happening right now. I mean, in my lifetime, I'm getting close to 50. I've seen a lot. You know, I was born at the tail end of the Vietnam War and Nixon and that whole thing. But between climate change, the economy, the pandemic, war, all these different things are happening. The political divide that has never been so divided, not only here in the States, but everywhere in the world, there's just this complete shift in everyone just, you know, becoming more tribal in their beliefs. What do you think is happening right now in the world? Because there's obviously some sort of shift. Something is happening in the world. There's an energy going on. There's almost a level of chaos. It doesn't seem to be getting any better as far as the chaotic aspect of it is concerned. What do you believe is going on?
So this is something I've thought a lot about and researched quite a bit for my books. What's happening, I believe, is that the Earth and everybody on the Earth is going through an ascension process. So what does ascension mean? It means that we're ascending or increasing in vibration or in frequency. Why is that happening? Well, partly because we planned it that way, but partly because of the amount of light that's flooding the planet. The light brings up everything that is unlike itself, everything that is of a low vibration. Right. The reason it does that is so that we can process it, move it through conscious awareness, acknowledge it, think it, and then release it. So what's happening essentially, the whole world and every person on it is going through a purification process. It's happening to human civilization as a whole, and it's happening in every individual life. A lot of people walking around carrying crystallized or frozen or trapped trauma or pain in their bodies, things that happened that they never fully processed. All of that now needs to come up so that you can move it through conscious awareness and then let it go. That's what organic or integrated healing means. It simply means you consciously experience the emotional pain, and in doing so, can then release it. So if we want to stay in body on planet Earth as Gaia ascends, we have to increase our vibration as well. And you do that by letting go of the stored trauma, the anger, the lack of forgiveness. All of that has to be released. Chaos is an important part of the process. In my first book, Your Soul's Plan, there's a channeling in which I'm talking to an angel. And the angel says, quote, "Chaos is fertile ground. Indeed, it is the most fertile ground for growth." And I think that's exactly what we're going through right now.
Well, I'd have to agree with that angel in many ways, because when you have chaos in your own life, you learn. Like we were talking about before, it is you definitely learn. It's not pleasant. It's not, if you had a choice about it, you know, a conscious choice right now, you'd say, I'd rather not get hit by the car.
Right.
I'd rather not lose my house or my money and things like that. But it does create learning experiences. And boy, we got a lot of it coming. It's so true, because a lot of the things that have been happening over the last 10 years has been under the surface. You know, racism was like something that was just underneath the surface here in the States, and everywhere else. But racism was something that like never really talked about it much here and there, you know. Now it's wide out in the open in a way that I never experienced in growing up, and prejudices and things like that that were pretty dormant. And just like only in the outskirts or the fringe would be, you know, would be before be very fringe like to talk about things like that, where now it's on the evening news, you know.
Yeah, and I think this is exactly the kind of experience and process we need to go through in order to ascend along with Earth. Now, a lot of people, I think, are feeling disappointed and maybe even depressed at what's going on in the world. And it looks outwardly like we're actually headed in the wrong direction. But if you think about, for example, what happens when light hits an object and casts a shadow? Well, the brighter the light, the darker the shadow, until at a certain point, there's so much light that it actually dissolves the shadow. I think we're in the stage of maximal darkness, which precedes the dissolving of the shadow.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful analogy. That's a really, really great analogy. I wanted to also ask you about Edgar Cayce's teachings. Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk a little bit about who Edgar Cayce was and then also how his teachings or how he spoke about the soul's purpose and so on?
So Cayce's back on the other side now. When he was here, he was a psychic medium. Many people consider him to be the greatest American psychic medium who ever lived. And there's a very interesting and funny story in regard to Cayce and the idea of pre-birth planning. A true story, late in Cayce's career, he was visited by two wealthy women, sisters from New York City. And the sisters said to him, "Mr. Cayce, we are at the end of our rope in regard to our brother. He lives under a bridge in New York. He drinks too much. We've tried over the years everything we can think of to help him turn his life around, and nothing has worked. Mr. Cayce, can you tell us anything that will help us help our brother?" Well, upon hearing this, Cayce did what he always did, which is he went into trance. He went into the Akashic record, which is the complete non-physical record of everything relevant to Earth, including the pre-birth planning. And then he said to the two sisters, quote, "Your brother is the single most highly evolved soul about whom I have ever obtained information. And the three of you planned together before any of you were born for him to do exactly what he's been doing so that the two of you could learn to be more compassionate." Well, that was not exactly the response they were hoping for, but that's how it works. And Cayce knew that.
And he he spoke a lot about the soul's purpose and the soul's journey. In planning as well.
Yeah, that was very much a focus of his work. And for those who are interested, there's a headquarters in Virginia Beach, I believe it's called the Association of Research and Enlightenment. That was Cayce's organization.
Now, I'm going to ask you a couple questions I ask all of my guests. What is your mission in this life?
My mission is to help people understand the deeper spiritual meaning and purpose of their greatest challenges.
And what is the ultimate purpose of life?
The ultimate purpose is to give and receive love.
Great answers, my friend. And where can people find out more about you and your book, the new book, Your Soul's Love, and your other books and work that you do?
The website is yoursoulsplan.com. I would invite everybody to sign up for the newsletter on the homepage. That'll keep you informed of all the workshops. You can see the list of workshops on the events page. If you're interested in a between live soul regression, click on sessions in the main menu. And if you want to reach me to ask a question or for any reason, use the contact page. It's all there on yoursoulsplan.com.
Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an enlightening conversation, to say the least. I hope everybody listening has a little bit better understanding. And hopefully this is a beginning point of doing more research, more understanding, trying to learn more and more about this process and hopefully help us on our own life's journey. So I appreciate you, my friend.
Well, it's been great to talk with you. You asked great questions. And thank you for doing this show. I think you're bringing a lot of much needed light into our world.
I appreciate that. I'm doing what I can. I'm doing my best, my friend. So thank you.
Me too.
I want to thank Rob for coming on the show and sharing his knowledge of pre-birth planning. And hopefully that gives us a little bit better understanding of where we came from and where we're going. Now, if you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to get one of Rob's amazing books or reach out to him, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/071. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.